southern sea land of Nestville. We've had Bambada in the house. We've had Craig G, Master Ace, OC, and so forth and so forth. But at Get Down 37, we are proud to introduce the man, the icon, Big Daddy Kane is in the house. My name is Peter PTA. I'm sort of a hip-hop Simpsons wrestling expert. And before I sit down, I'd just like to say, if anyone has questions through the evening, I am perfectly capable of getting up and walking over and giving you the microphone. If you are an MC, I will hold the microphone for you so you don't take too long. And then you can ask your question. If you don't want to ask in English, then don't worry. Jeg taler dansk. It's going to be amazing. But let's get down to it. Big Daddy Kane, give him a round. Do you want to introduce yourself to the audience?
Yeah, what's up, y'all? Hey, is this on? Am I even? Yeah, how y'all doing?
You good?
Good, good. Good to see you all, and thanks for having me.
Big Daddy Kane, how did you get into hip-hop?
I got into hip-hop, you know, just basically, you know, hearing it in the streets and stuff and in school. You know, it was just something that I thought was fascinating. And, you know, I started, you know, with like, collecting cassette tapes at the time. You know, that's what, like, you get the tapes of, who was it then? Grandmaster Flash, you know, the Flash tapes, DJ AJ. Anyway, you know, different people back in the 70s, they had the cassette tapes out, you know. This is before, you know, Rapper's Delight and King Tim the Third or anything like that. You know, this is just when you hear the cassette tapes.
Because there was stuff going on in the Bronx, but you were from?
I'm from Brooklyn, yeah. So therefore, you know, it was like we would receive, tapes from parties that they had done, whether it was just of the DJ playing that night, or if it might have been a Cold Crush versus Fantastic Five battle, or the Treacherous Three at this party, something like that, yeah.
Nowadays, if you go to New York, you go to Williamsburg in Brooklyn and have a nice cup of coffee and stuff like that. Was it like that back in the 70s as well? Nice and cozy?
Nah, not at all, man. No, in the 70s, you came to Brooklyn, more than likely, you were pretty much going to get robbed. That's pretty much what was going to happen. There were gangs, Tomahawks, Jolly Stompers, Outlaws. Some of this is documented in a movie called The Education of Sonny Carson. If you ever get a chance to see that, you could probably see some of that. But yeah, there were gangs in the 70s. And, you know, that's pretty much the thing, you know, everybody's running around trying to rob everybody for their sheepskins and bomber jackets and goose downs, you know. But the one good thing I will say in defense of the gangs was that only the leader got to carry the gun. None of the other members couldn't carry one.
But instead of joining a gang, I don't know if you did, but you became an MC. How
yeah.
did that come about?
I was into hip-hop. I'm listening to it. And I have an older cousin by the name of Murdoch. And he was somebody probably like about 5-6 years older than me that I looked up to when I was little. And he started rhyming, you know, him and two other guys. They started a little group room in our neighborhood in Bed-Stuy, Brooklyn. And because he was doing it and I was a young cat, I started trying to rap just so I could hang with him, you know. And he rapped with two other guys. So I knew that, you know, he was going to say I was too young, but I felt like if I was good enough to beat the other two guys, then he would put me down. So I started off as a battle rapper, you know, writing battle rhymes. And, you know, that's how I started really, putting my stuff down together. And I actually did, you know, rap and battle both the other guys. But then my cousin decided that he wanted to play football instead, so he stopped rapping.
And you kept going?
Yeah.
How did you go from writing battle rhymes and, I assume, becoming very good at it, to making actual songs? How did the Big Daddy Kane persona come about?
Honestly, like back then, I was like a big fan of Grandmaster Caz. And I knew that Caz had, you know, different styles of writing. You know, he had battle rhymes, he had party rhymes, he had girl rhymes, like the famous Yvette rhyme, you know. And, you know, he had even conscious rhymes, like the rhyme he did in the Wild Style movie. So therefore, I would try all these different styles. Like I'd get, you know, one of the five subject notebooks, and each subject would be about a different subject, you know. Like, you know, some would be about, you know, some would be battle rhymes, some would be funny rhymes about girls, some would be how rough the ghetto is, you know, things of that nature.
Just quickly, if any of you ever go to New York, there's something called the Hush Tour, where you can actually have Grandmaster Caz drive you around New York, Harlem and the Bronx. It's quite an experience, and he's still an amazing MC. I assume he's like 50, not...
Yeah, somewhere around there.
Take anything away from people's ages and stuff. So...
And you're talking about Caz, not me.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, God. Always 28, always 28. How did you go from... like writing the rhymes to actually putting stuff out? Like, who helped you in that process?
Well, back in 1984, a friend of mine kept telling me about this here rapper from Long Island. You know what I'm saying? You know how dope he was, and he does the human beatbox too, and he did this great, he did that great. And one day we were right by the Albee Square Mall, which was a big shopping, popular shopping center in Brooklyn. And he came telling me, he's like, yo, my man Bismarcky D is in the mall right now, man. He just was beatboxing. He did the beat from Numbers. Yo, I'm like, okay, I tell you what, let's go over here and meet your man. And I'm going to serve him. And when I serve him from now on, I want you going to your man Bismarcky D telling him about MC Kane, you know? So we went in there and I met Biz and I asked him for a battle and we started battling and they kicked us out the mall. We went outside in front of the mall and finished the battle. And after the battle, Biz was like, yo, you dope, man. You should come stick with me, man. I be doing shows in the Bronx and Long Island and Harlem and places. If you run with me, I promise you're going to make a record one day. And the brother, you know, he kept his word. You know, when he had an opportunity, he got an opportunity to run with the Juice Crew, and he went on the road with Roxanne Shanté beatboxing for her and stuff, and eventually he made Make the Music, and right afterwards he came back and he got me and brought me in to help finish up writing his album, and, you know, introduced me to everyone and got me my deal with Cold Chillin'.
Nowadays, I don't know, have any of you heard of Bismarcky? To me, he seems like slightly crazy. Is that kind of a persona he portrays, or is that just the way he is?
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with Biz. I mean, Biz is a very intelligent dude, but I mean, you know, he's silly. He likes to play around, and if people treat him like he's crazy, he'll intentionally act crazy, you know, just on purpose. But there's nothing wrong with Biz.
Good to know. Good to know. The Juice Crew, one of the most infamous things I guess you did together was the symphony. How did that come about?
The night I recorded Raw, I had Kool G Rap with me. And after we finished the song, we just spit some bars on the track. And Marley eventually played it on the radio on WBLS. And a lot of people were calling up, requesting it, wanting to hear it. So Marley felt that it would be a great idea to have me and Biz on a song together for his album. So that was the whole concept. But then along the lines, he came one day and said, yo, I want to put Craig on the song. Craig, meaning Craig G. And, you know, Craig had a song out at the time called Duck Alert, just in Red Alert. You know, I was like, you know, Craig is dope. You know, okay, cool. But then the day we were filming the pictures for Marley's album cover, for the In Control cover, he introduced us to this other guy named Master Ace. And we kicked it and took pictures, and then we went back to Marley's house to go record the song. And then Marley said that he wanted to put Master Ace on the song. And at that time, Ace used to wear these, like, real big, like, goofy-looking glasses. So I was a little hesitant. Like, me and G-Rap was in the corner, like, I don't know, man. just, you know, I'm not really feeling this. And we, you know, we decided let's leave. You know, let's not do the song. This ain't gonna be a good look. And Ace spit his verse. Like, he went first and he spit his verse. And when we heard it, you know, I turned to G. I'm like, yo, you know, Glass is kind of hot, man. You know, he was, you know. And then when Craig did his verse, like, you know, then after, like, you know, G-Rap was like, yeah, I kind of like do a verse better than Craig's, you know. So he was like, you know, okay, yeah, this is going somewhere. So we stayed and we did it. And I'm, you know, glad we did, because it became like one of the greatest posse cuts in, you know, hip hop history. So I'm glad we did, you know, do it.
And it is still to this day a great song. When you get on those types of tracks, do you feel like you have to outperform the other rappers? Or are you working with them?
I do. I don't know about them, but I do. You know,
straight.
I mean, it's nothing personal.
Kill.
I love them all to death. I love them like brothers, but yeah.
Because I always wondered, like, ever since I had the cassette when I was a kid, like, even up on the Public Enemy record, Burn Hollywood Burn, where you're going right after Chuck D, it's almost like you.
No, I was going after Chuck and Ice Cube.
It's almost
not
like
just
you can
one. I
mean, out consciously perform those cats.
Yeah, that's, you know, I mean, that's what a real, I think that's what a real MC does. It's nothing personal. It's not like I got anything against Chuck or Ice or anybody. I love them all. You know, I mean, Chuck D reached out to ask me to be on a song with him. I was honored, you know. I mean, you know, but I mean, still, I feel like it's my job as an MC to give my best performance, you know.
Two of the lyricists that we've never heard go toe-to-toe like that are you and Rakim. How come?
That's a question you probably have to ask Rakim.
I kind of, sort of did.
You know, I mean, we had, you know, we had the opportunity twice. We had the opportunity to do a song together, and we had the opportunity to actually battle each other. And, you know, neither one happened. In the mid-90s, like around like 94, I was on MCA as well, same label as him. And A&R there thought it was a great idea for us to do a song together. I said, I don't have a problem with it, you know. And they tried to put us together, and they told me to talk to him on the phone. They called him and put me on the phone with him. And when I spoke to Rakim, he told me that under his contract with MCA, he's only allowed to do a song with one outside artist, and he already did one with, I forget, some reggae artist. He said he already did one with this reggae artist, so I can't do another song with another artist, you know. And I just, oh, okay, cool. And I told the A&R dude, I was like, well, he said that y'all won't let him do a song with no one else, so I mean, I guess y'all gotta fix that. So that's how that ended, you know. And in 1989, they tried to get us to battle on pay-per-view television. There's a thing called Rap Mania. It was something that they did in 88, and it made a lot of money. So the following year, they tried to make it battles, me against Rakim, LL against Kool Moe Dee, Cold Crush against Flash and the Furious Five, and Roxanne Shanté against Sparky D. And they were offering us, you know, more money than we had ever seen in our lives. You know, they were offering us like, I think, like $75,000 a piece. And it never happened. Like, I got a call from the guy who was running Advanced Silk, and he asked me, could I talk to them? And I called Eric B, because he said there was a problem, like they wasn't going to do it. And I called Eric B, because Eric B is actually a close friend of mine. And I called him, and Eric told me it was going to happen. Then they told me, I don't think the problem is with Eric. Can you talk to Rakim? And I'm like, I don't really, you know him, because this is in the 80s. I'm like, I don't really know him. I don't, you know, I've never really been around. I don't know him like that. So it never happened.
When I told people I was doing this, I got two questions that they said I had to ask you. One was, did you have sex with Madonna? And the other one was, do you feel like Rakim was going at you with the follow the leader, word to daddy indeed line?
Yeah, I thought he was going at me with the follow the line, the word to daddy line. We ended up speaking after that. You know, because see, what was going on was like, while everybody wanted me and Rakim to battle, Eric B is with him, and Eric B's brother, Ant Live, was my road manager. See what I'm saying? That's how cool me and Eric B was. So anyway, one night a girl gave me a photograph, and on the photograph she had wrote, "Dear Kane, I want to set it off and get R-A-W. Ain't no half stepping because I'm going to break your wrath in half." These are all titles of my songs, except for Wrath and Break the Wrath in Half, which was supposed to be the name of a Rakim song, Dissing Me. And the girl claimed that she heard the song, Eric B played it for her, and yada yada. And she's telling me this right in front of Eric B's brother. So that's when Eric B's brother, Ant Live, said, you know, there's enough of these lies going around me. I can't take it no more. Y'all need to talk. So he called Rakim and put me on the phone, and, you know, I asked him about the Word to Daddy line. And he said, nah, that's just something that they say in Long Island. He said, that's just Long Island slang. It wasn't intended for me. And then he asked me about a line and Set It Off when I said, rap soloist, you don't want none of this. And which I never even put together, because I guess Eric B and Rakim, he said, and you know that I'm a soloist. And I'm like, no. I'm saying that I'm the rap soloist and competition don't want none of this. That's what I mean. I wasn't saying he don't want, I'm saying none of y'all, no one wants any of this. You know, it wasn't directed at him. And that's when we pretty much squashed everything. And no, I didn't have sex with Madonna.
Well, all right then. But at the time, in like the late 80s, early 90s, you really were the guy people wouldn't want none of. You were just that good at emceeing. That took you places, like big tours, you were over here, all that stuff. How did that influence you? How old were you at the time?
My early 20s.
Yeah. How was it going to Europe as an early 20s kid from Brooklyn?
I think the first time I came over to Europe, I might have been about 19. It was fun, fascinating, you know, you know, stuff, you know, that, you know, you never imagined really happening, getting to, you know, tour the world and see different countries and things like that, man. So, I mean, you know, it was fascinating to me.
How do you feel about the hip hop culture being over here? Like, us pretty much duplicating, emulating what you guys did in New York in the 70s, early 80s?
I think that it's beautiful and fascinating, you know, to see, you know, how hip hop can touch, you know, so many people and, you know, travel so far. And even more importantly, I think it's so beautiful how people in Europe embrace hip hop, you know, because you guys embrace it differently than America, you know. Like in America, I stand on stage for maybe about 20 minutes, a half an hour, and everybody's happy, satisfied, and all they really want to hear is the hit songs, you know. I come to, you know, anywhere in Europe, I'm on stage for like an hour doing like a whole bunch of album cuts, you know, songs that's on the album. And then when I get through after like this hour, you know, people still say, do How You Get a Record Deal? Do Dance with the Devil? They still screaming for more stuff, you know. I mean, it's like y'all, you know, you really get into it, like the whole culture and every single song on the album. And like I remember, like one of the very first times coming to London, it was a girl, you know, and I don't mean a B-girl. I mean like, you know, like one of, you know, Miss Prissy type girls, you know, like that was just telling me stuff from off like the album credits. Like she actually read the credits. I'm sitting there like, yo, it's amazing. Like, you know, like it's, but that's the way it's supposed to be, you know. Because, you know, hip-hop is not just music, it's a culture, and I think y'all embrace it as a culture, and that's beautiful, you know?
Round of applause for us embracing the culture. You were also fairly smart early on, I would say, to have the whole Prince of Darkness persona, where you had like the bathrobe or the pajamas on and stuff. Did that get you a lot of girls?
Mm-hmm.
Does it still get you a lot of girls?
I'm married now.
All right, so just the one?
Hmm?
Just the one?
Yeah.
Good work, man. Are there any songs of yours that are your favorites to perform these days?
Set It Off is still always my favorite.
How come?
I don't know. It's just that song that gives me my energy. That's when my energy kicks in. When I do that, I'm ready to go.
How about you guys? Do you have a favorite Big Daddy Kane song? Marie, what's yours?
Oh, thanks.
How did you do Ain't No Half-Steppin'? There's a lot of samples on that song.
Yeah. I tell you, I was at Biz Crib with his DJ Cool V, and we were looking through some 45s that Biz bought, and we heard that one. I forgot what the mixer used to have that you could sample, like a little, like one bar, loop it up. Those mixes from back in, anyway, Cool V looped it up and I was rhyming to it. I'm like, yeah, this is dope. I need this. And then Biz called, like ecstatic about a song that he found, something he was looking for that he wanted to use, and he finally found it. He was so happy and excited. I'm like, okay, look, there's this Emotions record here that you got at the crib called Blind Alley. What you gonna do with this? I'm like, can I have it? I don't care, go ahead, I got it. He's just so happy that he had this other song. He was just like, go ahead, you can have it. So I took it and, played with it, listening for a while, and then came up with the Ain't No Half-Steppin' from the Heat Wave songs. Like, yeah, I'm gonna put this in there. Yeah. And I always wanted to use that noise from UFO. So I decided that should go in there too. And I bought this Monk Higgins record. Big Brass Bed or Big Water Bed? Big Water Bed? Okay, yeah. Yeah, I bought that. I don't know. I just love the way that sax hit in there, that brand, and you know, I was just like, you know. And I remember the day we recorded it, like, because Marley Marl, he wanted it to be just the Blind Alley sample, and the Heat Wave just played that on the chorus. He didn't want to use the UFO. He said, there's just too many samples. It's starting to sound cluttered. I'm like, it sounds straight to me. But yeah, that's how that came about.
It still sounds straight to this day.
Thanks.
After the Big Daddy Kane era, you might say there was like the Biggie Tupac era, then the JC era sort of came in hip hop. And somehow you kind of connected to all of that stuff. Like, they've rhymed at your birthday, or you've hung out with them and so forth. How did that feel to like sort of pass the torch to the next generation of rap superstars?
Not really sure. I don't quite really understand the question you asked, but I mean, to see artists like, you know, Jay-Z and Biggie, Nas, you know, Tupac, you know, see all of them, you know, get on and do their thing. I thought it was wonderful because I thought that they all were super talented, you know, and, you know, lyrical and, you know, true hip hop artists.
Because if you look at someone like a JC, the persona he had where he was super lyrical, but also kind of like a ladies man, reminded us a little bit of your swagger from back in the day. Do you think you could have been put on in the late 80s if you had, or in the late 90s if you had been like on Rockefeller or whatever? Like if you could have had a second run at that time?
I mean, yeah, I don't see why not. Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think where I could have really did damage and did my thing would have been on Bad Boy. You know, I think that would have been the best home. You know, just for the simple fact that the things I understood about hip hop, Puffy understood, you know, that, you know, people need to dance. You know, people need to have fun. Like, that was one of the main things that, you know, Puff tried to do with his production. Make sure there's something that you can dance to. And even if you, you know, you kick in the most gangster, thugged out lyrics in the world, it's like he would try to still make the song feel fun, you know?
Definitely. How about now, in the situation that we have in hip-hop now? Is there anything you can embrace? Are there any artists out there that you enjoy?
I like Joel Ortiz. I like Joel Ortiz.
Why?
I think he's like real lyrical, and then to see, like, you know, how he lost all that weight, I think that he's really trying to become an artist as well, you know, because, I mean, you know, it's nice to be a dope MC, but to really, I think, you know, reach your fan base in a way where they grow with you, grow old with you, you have to really be an artist, you know. You have to have that ability to come to their town and perform and be able to give them more than what they heard on the album. You have to have that look or swag that your fans wanna dress like you or act like you. You have to have that compassion where when you're spitting your lyrics and they're listening, they're reflecting. It's making them remember something in their life that's very similar to what you're talking about, you know, and that's something that you do as an artist. Yeah.
Definitely. There are some questions in the audience now, so I think we should move on to that portion. And also, if anyone else has something they would want to ask, raise your hand, please.
Thank you. Hey, Kane. First of all, I want to thank you because back when you were in 2012, you pulled my little brother on stage, and he's with me here today. I don't know if you remember any of that, but it meant a lot to him and meant a lot to us.
Cool.
Yeah. But other than that, I had two questions for you, and the first one being that today in Danish rap and rap culture in general, I think that the idea that freestyling is always off the dome is one that's very common. Like, most people believe it's only off the dome, but I think that maybe in the early 90s, back when you were still rhyming, you had riddance, and I was wondering what you, like, how you defined freestyle.
Well, the term, I think probably like in the 90s maybe, they basically changed the name. Back in the 80s, 70s, freestyle just meant a rhyme that was free of style, you know? Like, if you take a song like Lottie Dottie, Slick Rick, that's a story rhyme, you know? You take something like The Message from Flash and the Furious Five, you know? That's like a conscious rhyme, you know, about the ghetto. You know, you take like Straight Outta Compton by N.W.A. That's a gangster rhyme. But then you take something like Raw, Coogee Rap Poison, Eric B. and Rakim, I Ain't No Joke. Those are all freestyle rhymes. We're not talking about no specific subject matter, you know, just talking about how nice we are on the mic, or we'll battle anybody, or whatever, you know, just those were like freestyle rhymes, and those were written. Back then, when we used to call it off the dome, when you just make up rhymes in your head as you're going along. We used to call it off the dome, but freestyle rhymes, you know, like, were written rhymes,
yeah.
You know.
And my second question was that, on the Daddy's Home record, Scoop is rapping a lot, but Scrap never came into rapping or never put anything like out on the albums or whatever?
Nah, he rapped on. Scrap rapped on, I think, He rapped on one of the albums. I can't remember which
yeah,
one.
Yeah, but like Scoop was like big on one of the.
Well, Scoop was the one that always stayed with me. Like somewhere along the line, Scrap went on and started doing his own thing, so he wasn't really even with me anymore, you know.
And all right, I have one last one. One last one, I promise. On the back, this is crazy niche, and I don't know if you even know the answer, but on the back cover of backside of the cover of the Daddy's Home LP, beneath Scoop's name, it says code name asshole. And I was just wondering if you need
that's under Scrap name.
Oh yeah, that's under Scrap.
That's under Scrap's
yeah,
name.
Do you know why is that? I read it and I was wondering.
What was up under everybody was names that we would call each other when we cracking. Like those are like the main names we would call each other when we snapping on each other.
Yeah.
You
all
know.
Right. All right. I'm gonna pass the mic.
Okay, so Kane, I know you dropped an album last year with Last Supper,
uh-huh.
A new group, but I was wondering, are you ever going to drop a new solo album?
I don't know. yeah, that's not really that's not really in the plans at the moment. I mean, I can't tell you no, because I don't know what the future may hold, but it's not nothing I'm really concerned about at the moment.
Okay.
Well, come here, man. You said I ain't seen you since 2012, man. Come up here and give me some dap, man.
Good question, sir. Anyone else? Well, you got the chair now, boy. Got more questions? No more solo albums. What else are you gonna do, Kane?
Oh, right now
movies.
We have
TV
two like,
shows.
Yeah, two television shows in development right now. So that's really like where my main focus is right now.
Where would you like to see hip hop culture go, and where would you like to see Big Daddy Kane go from here on?
Hip hop culture. I would like to see a lot of the more conscious hip hop artists getting mainstream play.
Like who?
Your Talib Kweli. Common. Even though, I mean, you know, he's doing his thing in Hollywood, but I mean, you know, music wise, I would like to see him with a whole lot of you know, type artists. I would, and any of a new and upcoming artist that has a positive message, you know, I would like to see them getting more mainstream play, just to like, you know, just for the sake of changing the mind state of the youth that embrace hip hop.
So I was thinking, if you were to write a book, call it "I Did Not Have Sex Met Madonna" or whatever, what would be the key anecdote? What would you want to tell the world that you did?
You know, I mean, to be honest with you, I probably would tell a few sex stories in there. You know? But I mean, I'm not gonna lie. And nothing happened between me and Madonna. I mean, we actually stood in a room, you know, butt naked in front of each other and had a full blown conversation. But she was just telling me a story about her standing in the road naked with her thumb out, taking pictures like she was hitchhiking, and she couldn't believe not one single car stopped for Madonna. You know?
We're kind of drawing to the end here. The man, the icon, is about to leave the building, mayhaps. But we have a final question.
Kane, what do you think about the evolution in mainstream rapping to the thing that's mainstream nowadays?
Well, you mean, what do I think about mainstream rap music right now?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a lot different than what I grew up doing and listening to. It's a whole lot different. It seems like, you know, the lyrical content is not as strong as it could be. And I think the main thing that probably hurts it the most is how musically everything pretty much sounds the same. Like there's no diversity, you know? It's like I'm used to like where Chubb Rock, MC Light, Slick Rick, Big Daddy Kane, Rakim, Public Enemy, Special Ed, all these artists I just named all sound different. None of them sound alike, you know? Biggie, Jay-Z, Nas, Wu-Tang, Naughty by Nature, Onyx, Redman, none of them sound alike, you know? Where it's like, where now it's like, it seemed like everybody sound alike, everybody's talking about the same thing, and every beat sounds real similar. So it kind of, type of thing where like you're listening to like a 24-hour song as opposed to a bunch of different artists. You know, I would like to see a lot more diversity. And I think that, you know, you cats as the youth would appreciate that more, you know, because everybody is their own self. You know, we need to like be respected as individuals, you know. And I mean, I think that that's probably the main thing. But, you know, when anything becomes corporate, that's just the way it works, man. You know, when something becomes corporate, it's... how the saying go, quantity comes in and quality goes out.
And before we go to period, end of story, your friend has the final question, I believe.
Okay, so my favorite album of yours is probably It's a Big Daddy Thing or Daddy's Home. But I would like to know what is your favorite album of yours?
It's a Big Daddy Thing.
Both to make it and the final sound.
Come again?
Both to like the making of the album, the time before the album, and the final sound of the album.
Oh, yeah, it's a Big Daddy Thing.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it's a Big
Just
Daddy
wanted to know.
Yeah. I think my man back there had a question too.
Who's James' man back there?
Yeah, Kane, I don't know if you know this, but I was like browsing and searching and yeah, just reading stuff, and I found out that actually there's a guy who made a list of some of the rappers who have the most complex words in their lyrics. And you were actually close to have as many complex words as Shakespeare's in your text. So do you think that the complexity of the lyrics is the thing that doesn't make the mainstream things as cool as back in the old days, or?
No. I mean, you got people like Rob Bass, Milk from the Audio 2 that, you know, basically did like Dr. Seuss type rhymes, but they still made great music. You know, so I mean, I don't think that that's gonna, you know, I don't think that's the key to making a great song, you know. I mean, the complexity can, you know, be a benefit or something that makes you a great MC, but I don't think that's any of the keys to making a great song, no.
Yeah, straight up to you in hip-hop, what is the most important, lyrics or beats?
Okay. Well... I think for the sake of pleasing, you know, majority of your fans, you want the beat to be tight. But for me personally, lyrics, like that's the main thing that I'm thinking about, you know, it's because if the song does blow up, I want you to know it for what I did, not what the producer did.
Yeah, I have two questions. Where do you see the hip-hop culture in New York right now, since the areas there probably, it changed a lot since back in the days where...
Right now...
Like if you want to change the roots of hip-hop.
I mean, right now it's in New York, it's a lot different, you know, because I mean, you're talking about the birthplace of hip hop, and at the present moment, New York artists are not acting like the birthplace of hip hop. You know, they're acting like guests, you know.
So we can't really change it somewhere because
there. I mean, I'm pretty sure down the line somewhere things will change. I mean, it's just a matter of the right artists coming along, you know, that understands how to be an artist and build a fan base. I mean, you know, I think that Kendrick Lamar, he's doing a great job. He's not a New York dude, but I mean, I think he's doing a great job of representing the West Coast, you know.
Thanks. And then my man here, where are we? Okay, he asked me if I could ask you very politely to spit some rhymes for us. Yeah. And thank you for coming too. It's so big.
Well, I mean, I'm glad to be here, and it was great talking with you all. I'm not gonna, you know, get into a thing right now though, because I got a show to do tonight and whatnot. So I want to try to save the pipes, you know. Yeah, I'm not a young dude no more, you know.
One line or something.
Yeah. Nah, I tell you what, I'll have him play one of the old joints, you know, so you can know what type of what Big Daddy Kane records. Okay.
On that note, ladies and gentlemen, big round of applause for Big Daddy Kane. Big round of applause for yourself. Get down 37. Let's have 10 more, so we can have a jubileum.